Edge.
This conference will.
I did a book review on the Slight Edge years back, and I think it was a few years back. You could probably find it if you go into Manatrain, and I think it took me, I don't know how many weeks to do it, but it was a number of weeks, probably 4 to 6 weeks to cover that book. And easily I could have covered this book in probably 8 weeks, but I wanted to get it all in because I want to do something different with the book, and we'll talk about that when we get to the end of it. So the idea is, and it's a different book from the other Slight Edge, although they kind of talk about Slight Edge being, you know, what it really is. It's really about the difference between those who are successful and those who are not. A lot of us like to make up stuff because it protects us, right? I mean, we'll make up things like, well, why is Mary Jo successful? I'm not. Well, she's a lawyer. She's a this. Or you go on and on and on. And that really has nothing to do with it. It really has nothing to do with it. And but we like to make stuff up. So we make stuff up because it gives us a feeling of justified, or it allows us to be victim to something in our own lives, something that we don't have or something that we fell short on, or our upraising or an event that happened in our life, whatever that is. But the real concept behind this is that the difference between somebody who makes it and somebody who doesn't is just the very slightest differential. And it's something that we all need to review and look at and say, what is it about us? What is it that we can be doing differently that can create that slight edge in our life? Don't you want to have that slight edge? Of course. We don't want to be stuck in doldrums. We don't want to be stuck being a regional director for 15 years in Manatech. We would like to be platinum presidentials. We'd like to move on in our lives. But why is it that so many people stay stuck? And that's what this book is about. It's about talking about what are those small little habits we need to form in our life, small, tiny, little things that can make such a gigantic difference for the results we create. Because they aren't major, but they're just something that, just like the other book by Jeff Olson, they're just little things that we change today. We might not see results in 2 weeks or 4 weeks or 8 weeks or 12 weeks, but they're going to create a totally different life for us in the long term. So that's what Slight Edge is about. And what is it that, why are we going to listen to Leo Widener? Well, one of the reasons I really never had come across this guy in the past, but one of the things about Leo you need to know is that his main mentor in life was none other than Napoleon Hill. And he spent 40 years around Napoleon Hill. So he has tremendous insight into what makes people successful and what doesn't. And one of the discussions, many of that they were focused on so many times, was Napoleon Hill would get so frustrated with the fact that he had written this incredible book about Think and Grow Rich, giving everybody the formula how to get wealthy, and yet so few people were really getting it. They really weren't grabbing onto it and really getting it. I mean, there were some people that get it, right? We know somebody off the top of our heads that read Think and Grow Rich like 10 or 15 times before he was 18 years old, and he became a multimillionaire in his 20s. His name is Jet. He was the number one associate Manatech for years, for the first, 15 years of the company's existence. So the idea was that he came out of a background of nothing. I think he had a brother that was shot and killed, an uncle that was a drug guy. He had from the bad parts of L.A., his family, that's where he grew up. And he just fought his way out of there. And Think and Grow Rich was the most instrumental book in his entire life. So why does the book work for some and the book doesn't work for other people? That was the conflict that Napoleon Hill had during his lifetime. And what happened is, through all the discussions with Leo and all the work that they did, Leo put together a book that kind of sets forth and gives you a path to run on. What are the slight differences I can make in my life? What are the slight habit changes I can make in my life that can help me totally change my life results? So we're going to talk about that today and kind of go through his book little piece by piece. We'll see how far we get, hopefully, through most of it. I tried to summarize it, but as you see by your outline, it's 15 pages. A lot of it is just attachments to give you some concepts. But so let's jump in and talk about it. So it really is a book about not wanting people to settle. And a lot of you on this call have kind of settled in. And we end up settling because we don't want to cause stress in our life. We don't want to feel like we haven't accomplished something, so we say, I'm a regional director and I've accomplished tremendous amounts in my life and I'm really happy exactly where I am. Where in reality, what would you be doing if you had $10,000 coming in every month from Manatech? Would your life look different? Would you be able to create different things? For me, I'd be able to put a new church up in Brazil every month. right? Because it cost $12,000 to build a church in Brazil. Are you kidding me? There are 12 communities in Brazil right now that desperately are in need of having a church. So any of you on this call, if you'd like to be a donor, let me know, because we're looking to raise those funds. But what a blessing if you have the income coming in that, you know, I made a commitment to one community that I was going to help them build their church. So I'm dedicating $12,000 to one community. What a blessing that is, right? And that's the so the idea isn't to chase money. It's to chase what you're going to do with money and not settle on just settle on just what your life looks like today, when you can be so much more, every one of us. I'm not settling. And some people say, well, Mary Jo, look at all you accomplished. Look at your whole life. Who cares? That's nothing compared to what I can be. And then people say, well, you know, but I'm too old to do it. Are you kidding? It's just another excuse. I turned 58 in 2 months, and I'm just a spring chicken. I just barely started. I look at myself as maybe halfway through my life, right? I got another half to go, and I want the second half to be 10 times what the first half was. So it's about not settling, because there is so much more. So how do we turn? How do we really turn our dreams into our reality? And what Leo's done in this book is he's given us like a step-by-step implementation plan to achieve that dream. And what keeps us from achieving our dreams? Absolutely nothing. How many people have told you, oh, I can tell you what's keeping you from achieving your dreams? La-di-da-di-da. They all want to analyze you on all the reasons why you're not achieving your dreams. Well, with Leo's concept, there's nothing's keeping you from achieving your dreams. You don't need but one thing to understand the little things, the step-by-step process you can do each day, and understand how to tap into the fuel that these emotional experiences can give us. You just need what he calls the slight edge, and that's what it is. A few little habits each day, and understand how to tap into the fuel that these emotional experiences give to you. And that's the beauty of it. And he says, he talks about two simple principles that have always held true. People are extremely busy and occupied with everyday life. Any self-improvement program that's too complex, contains too many components, or requires too much time, and is successfully implemented by very few. So that's probably why we see some people take clever work and they really succeed, and other people do the clever work and they really don't really move their business very far. Because they're too extremely busy and occupied with everyday life, right? The gap between, here's the second principle, the gap between being average and incredible is far more narrow than most people realize. It's the little things that separate the highly successful people from the mediocre. So, Leo worked, like I said, with Napoleon Hill for years, helped him build a system of simple tools to allow everyone to enjoy success, and that simple set of tools he calls the life balance system. In fact, Leo refers to himself and has for years and years, he's called the life balance coach. Okay, and we've attached, I attached, as the first attachment, a page about called Radiating Greatness Comes From Within. It's just a great little piece. It's quoted from David McKay, and it comes out of this mission statement for Brigham Young University. All right, so the second point that he is in the prelude to the book was talked about the Bunker Bean Effect, and I'd never heard this story before, so it was kind of cute. What is your vision for your life? How great can it be? And the Bunker Bean Effect starts with a guy named Harry Leon Wilson, who in 1912, he's the guy who penned the novel Bunker Bean. And it starts off with a kid, Bunker Bean, who became an orphan as a very small child. He was alone. He was very poor. He dressed in ragged clothes that hung loosely around his skinny, small little frame. He was mocked and taunted by cruel and merciless children, right? And fear greeted him every morning when he awoke. And it became his constant companion. So he lived this life afraid of everything. Elevators, dogs, children, grown-ups, policemen, future, life. He was even afraid of himself. And one of his fateful days, he ran into a mystic who moved into one of the boarding houses next door. So he developed a friendship with him, and he went and met with this mystic, and his new friend believed that everybody was reincarnated. So he finally met with him one time, and he said he would charge him. So Bunker finally dragged enough pennies together to meet with him and get his reading from the mystic. And the mystic spoke with authority and said, "You are reincarnated Napoleon Bonaparte, conqueror of the world." And of course, boy, I mean, that could hardly be believed by Bunker Bean, right? Because he was so down and dragged out. And he said, and the mystic said, even as we speak, you are on your way to becoming courageous, determined, strong, self-reliant, fearless, successful. And he whispered and spoke all of this into Bunker Bean. The very thought that he was once Napoleon caused Bunker Bean to stand up a little straighter. And every day he focused on being Napoleon Bonaparte because he was reincarnated. He believed what the mystic had told him. So every day he said, what would Napoleon Bonaparte do? What would Napoleon Bonaparte act? How would he behave? He was a master strategist, winning his battles all the time. And he started changing, and it was amazed by the way people started reacting to him. They started reacting to him as if he were Napoleon. They wanted to be near him. They even followed him as if he was like some kind of leader. And he started seeing this strength, and his fears and timidity started disappearing. And his meager existence started dissipating because he became more successful. But then he started having the thoughts about, well, if I'm reincarnated, who was, no, but Napoleon Bonaparte was also reincarnated. So he went back to the mystic and he said, well, you know, who was I before Napoleon Bonaparte? And the mystic said, you were the mighty Ramses, the mighty Egyptian pharaoh, Ramses. So Bunker learned that Ramses was tall, handsome, and dressed meticulously. So he hired a professional tailor, fit him in new clothes. All of a sudden he built this incredible image. He was a king, and he must therefore do as kings do. Money, for example, as a king, what does money mean? It was not an issue because kings always have as much as they ever want. So all of a sudden he was attracting money like never before in his life. His mental image grew stronger with each passing day, and direct proportion, strength, vitality, excitement for life surged throughout his veins. And all of a sudden, Bunker Bean became this incredible man, right? I mean, he had the wealth all around him. He could do whatever he wanted to. He could create what he wanted. He had started where? Being nothing more than weak, timid, fearful, insignificant self. But then that magic day came in his life, a day of tragedy. He discovered that his mystic friend was a fake, a con artist. And for a few moments, Bunker Bean became a beaten man. Then, as if by revelation, he thought, when I believed myself to be a king, others reacted as if I were a king. When I believed myself to be weak and timid, others reacted as if I were weak and timid. So a new and inspiring truth came to him. I can be anything I can imagine and visualize in my mind. So that is a concept that is underlying to the entire book about the slight edge. It's about applying life balance principles in your daily life. Don't sell yourself short when it comes to identifying your ideal self and your ideal life. Just like Bunker Bean, believe in the great truth that everyone is born to be a king. Everyone is born to riches. Everyone is born to greatness. Everyone was born in the likeness of God. So that's the Bunker Bean effect, and that's what we want to keep focusing on. That's a Bunker Bean effect. So you can look at where your belief system is, right? And you can see how tarnished we get because of where our beliefs are and what our visualization is for ourselves. So we want to harness our brain's natural power. And if we look at the third concept here, if we look at the Olympics, how many of you watched the Olympics somewhere along the line over the last couple of weeks, right? Not only were the Olympics just phenomenally awesome, but the United States of America did the best they've done in years. In fact, I thought it was darling. Us women can all celebrate that, you know, the women in the Olympics, the U.S. women in the Olympics, if you just aggregate all the golds that women won, U.S. women won in the Olympics, we would be the third largest medalist of all the countries, only behind USA's total and China. U.S. women would be third. Isn't that incredible? Yoo-hoo! Way to go, girls, we say. I'm just kidding, guys. I'm not a sexist at all, but I thought that was kind of a cute fact. But anyway, the Olympics, let's talk about the Olympics. In the Olympics, no matter whether you viewed it or not, you can understand that when people ran those races, I mean, here the men beat the world Olympic record or matched it, and they still lost the 4x400 because Usain Bolt was in there for Jamaica. But the difference was like sometimes a few tenths of a second. When you look at the swimming results, it was like 1/100th of a second. how can you be, win something like by like 500s? I think the first loss, the silver medal that was won by our great swimmer was done by five. And he lost the gold by 500s of a second. So talk about a slight edge, people. That's what it is. It's just that hairline difference. Those are regionals versus presidentials, just a slight edge. We want to build it up to be something more because we want to have a reason why it's not happening in our life when that's not true. It isn't something more. It's just that slight edge. And we have to recognize the enormous power of habits that we have, and specifically habits of our thinking, our thinking habits. Habit formation is your brain's number one priority. You got to get that straight. Why? Because we want to be efficient. When we form habits, what it does, it helps us recreate everything that we've created before, right? Because we think the same way, we put thoughts in our mind, we feed our mind, we create a way of thinking, and we become that way of thinking. And that's why, if some of you have been through Clemmer, he says 95% of your decisions you don't make. Where does he get that from? He gets it from the idea that we have habits of thinking that create that result for us. And if you don't believe that, oh my gosh, I could give you 50 exercises right now on the phone that just will cause you to immediately recognize the truth of it. Because we become respond machines. We respond. We just go through that. We're if you want to be victim to something, you can become victim to your habits of thinking. But you can't, I'm not going to let you go victim to them because I want you to recognize how powerful they are. They're absolutely incredibly powerful. So if our habits of thinking are incredibly powerful, that they can cause us to be stuck in our life, what else can our habits of thinking do if we change them? Because if we change them, then we can become more efficient. We can form better habits. But because they're so powerful that our habits can destroy us, because we tend to hate letting go of habits we've already established. We don't see the world the way it is, but we see the world how we've trained ourselves to see it. Boy, if that isn't clear in the political world today, my goodness gracious, and I'm not getting into politics again. I'm not saying right, left, up, down, either one. I'm staying totally out of that realm. But I can just watch it from a spectator kind of and look at this and say, wow, you know, how we can totally dismiss the brain power of the Republicans or totally dismiss the brain power of the Democrats. What is this going on here? It's like they treat each other like both of each other's are idiots for some reason. When both sides of this coin have incredible ideas that need to be looked at to mesh, and that's how we've run this country for years, is we've meshed both concepts to create the greatness that we have in the United States of America, right? But the problem is that we only see things the way our mental habits have been established. So we got this one-way thing going on. And that's what sometimes causes you frustration when you start arguing around politics with people or something like that, and you listen to the other side and you go, wow, that's really a good point. You don't want to admit it, though, because, my gosh, you might lose the argument, so you want to beat up on the person instead or hate them or treat them ugly or whatever. It's just, but we do that. And we can do the same thing and take up about man attack. You know, leave politics aside and look at our business. Why do we fight for one way is the only way, or well, this has got to be the way it is, or this has got to be the, because we just get entrenched in our own habits of thinking. And our thinking models, our mental models, are what control us. So you need to change the mental models to change our life. And that's what this book is about. This book talks about, you know, helping you with mental models so that you don't have to be stuck in where you're stuck. And I'm not telling anyone in this group to change your faith. I'm not talking about that. There might be aspects of some of the applications of your faith that aren't serving you, but the faith itself isn't something we're trying to change. But so many of our mental models that we've built up around, you know, rationalizing, and we've accepted them and we've adopted them because we want to be right, and we get stuck in that way. And that concept of wanting to be right has caused us to be what? To be where we are, to not be the greatness that is out there for us. Now, we don't want to take shortcuts. What he establishes here that we have to have a great motive to change, because a lot of people don't want to change. They're happy with exactly where they are. And I'm not telling you not to have joy in your life, but I'm saying, why are you sitting back and being satisfied when there are people starving next door? People get satisfied when people say, I have enough money. I go, what about your next door neighbor? What about the places in Brazil that are looking to build churches they can't afford to and desperately need help? What I mean, I can give you so much desperation in this world, it's not even funny. The homeless shelters, the abused women, the abused children. I mean, there are a zillion and one. How many of you think there aren't enough causes out there to give money to? I mean, there are a zillion. Just go out and start working, trying to find a nonprofit to add to your downline because of the great program Sam has put together. And you'll just, your heart will just start, I mean, I'm not kidding. You'll just start crying out from inside about, oh my gosh, look at the difference that I could potentially make if I just had more influence, more money, more this, more that, more that. But what's holding us back? Nothing, he said. It's the slight edge, right? It's the slight edge. So we need to look at that for each one of us. And he gave a good example in here about, like, having the right motive. We have to have a motive. And if you have the wrong motive, it's not going to work for you, right? If you choose a wrong motive, you're not going to get raises. And he gave an example. This is kind of a cute one because it applies to people who are losing weight, which tends to be a lot of people in this world. He said he had a client that was desperately desired to lose 50 pounds. She was very overweight. And as part of her motive, he said, what is your motive? She decided to visualize herself walking down the beach in a bikini and all the guys turning and looking at her. So that was her visualization. And she described it in written detail. It seemed to be a very powerful motive, but only after a few weeks she was not making any progress on her weight loss goal. And so she went back and she started pondering and getting to work in active in her feelings journaling, which we'll talk about in a minute. And she finally came up with a different motive. It seemed that weeks before, she and some fellow students at her college had planned to travel to a meeting in a Volkswagen Bug. She remembered how totally humiliated she felt when, due to her overweight condition, she couldn't fit into the back seat. What made it even worse was that a male student leader she was attracted to had already climbed into the back seat. And he wasn't interested in her primarily because of her weight. So her new motive became she visualized herself as in her desired weight, easily and gracefully sliding into the back seat of the Volkswagen Bug. And do you know, in the next few months she threw up 50 pounds. So understand the difference in the motive. Then the motive needs to be, what was the motive about the bikini walking down the beach and all the guys looking at her? Do you see the difference in that motive versus the Volkswagen Bug and the guy that she liked? She made her motive something very specific to who she was. And that's what he talks about, making sure that your motive is right. You don't want to have a general motive. You know, sometimes we do dream boards, and if we don't get specific enough in our dream boards, the dream boards don't move us forward. So that's why our dream board really wants to be really specific about you, very specific about you, right? So the idea is get specific in your life about your motive. There's the Real Switch DVD out there, the one that talks, I think it's called The Real Switch, Make the Switch. The Real Switch I think is Manitex, and I think I put that in there. The Make the Switch I think is the name that, so change your outline and say Make the Switch video. You guys have heard that one. It talks about throwing a rope across two buildings, and the guy says, okay, walk across the rope. You know, the other building's a burning building. And the woman said, why would I ever do that? And she wouldn't go, right? And then he said, your child is in the building, is standing on the top of that building. It's on fire. And the woman went without even thinking about it in the Make the Switch video. It's one of the most CD. It's one of the most powerful CDs that are out there. I love it. In fact, I have every single time I sign up a new business person, what do I have them do? Listen to that CD every day for an hour a day, every day for the first 7 days they're involved in Manitech, because it's so powerful. But it's about motive. It is about motive, and we want to make sure that you identify a motive and a powerful motive that keeps you on track. So it's what is your motive? Incredibly critical that we find that and establish that. He gives and he gets into two basic life balance tools that will give you success right now, and he just gives you an idea of how to work with them. You know, and one of them is called the BITE. It's an instant on-the-spot success tool to use. And he talked about the study that shows 1 out of 110 people focus on the way things can be. The rest focus on why not. Are you one that focuses on why not? Some of you already, even in the beginning of this talk, when I talked about the difference between regional director and presidential, you automatically, your brain went into why you're not presidential. Right? Maybe because you've just gotten tired of fighting for it so long that you've just kind of given up on it. And that's what I don't want to see. That's what just giving up and just going, you know, you're bailing out, you're settling. It's kind of like the dog that wants steak, but he settles for a bone. What are you settling for in your life? Don't settle. Oh, Mary Jo, but I fought for it so many times. Why is it going to be different? Because you say it's going to be different, and you're going to create something different. But what do you need to change? The mental habits that you have in your head, because those are the things that have held you back in the past. And if you keep doing the same thing, you know, it's kind of like that concept of, you know, how are you going to solve the problem when you're using the same mindset that created the problem? Something's got to change up there. And he says, it's impossible for your mind to focus on two dissimilar thoughts at one time. So if your mind is filled with scarcity or filled with negative or filled with, you know, how are you ever going to get in harmony with your goals and desires? So he says the tool is to use the bite. Okay, what is the bite? Change your mental models, change your life. The bite. Four steps to create your first, you know, bite. Okay, four steps to create it. And the first example he gives in the book, he just gives an example about building a better relationship. Let's say you and your wife are having problems, or you and your husband. Or let's say you have problems with one of your children in your household. How many of us can think of one person that we have problems with today? I mean, that we're just not totally at peace with, right? I want you to think of that person. And then go through this exercise. It's phenomenal. Okay, the exercise is name an individual you want to improve a relationship. Number two, connect to deep emotions and meaning. In other words, you're going to start writing down the most positive attributes, gifts, talents of the person you chose. Okay? So write all those down. The next step is think back to some of the most positive, inspirational experiences you have ever had with that individual in your life. So now you've got about maybe, you know, 10 or 20 characteristics, maybe you have three or four experiences. And then you want to take all of that, and you're going to detail your feelings, by the way, when you write about the positive inspirational experiences. Get really specific about your feelings at the time of those inspirational moments and experiences. And then you transfer all that information, A and B, that's in the outline, you're going to transfer that onto a 3x5 index card, and you're going to carry it around with you all the time. And every time you think of that person, you're going to pull that index card out and you're going to read it. And I guarantee you, within a week, you're going to have a totally different viewpoint of that person. And because you see them differently, what are you going to help them do? See themselves differently. We always think that discipline and demand and structure and all this stuff and reprimand, but when we start lifting people up the way we view them, we help them rise to a higher level. It's a positive way of impacting people's life instead of trying to always get into the discipline, reprimand, and all the other ways. So what a cool thing. And he said this tool in and of itself has saved more marriages than he can count. And I believe it would. Because, you know, I've read about, and I do a lot of coaching, and I tell people, I said, you know, there are a lot of reasons why people get divorced. Money happens to be the number one reason, but there are a lot of other reasons that people get divorced. And usually it has to do with the same thing, just like money. We focus on that little itty-bitty little part. We focus on 5% of the things in the relationship instead of the 95%. Trust me, there's not a marriage on the face of the earth that can't find 5% that's defective. Some of us can find 10 or 20 or 30%. But you know what? Why are we focusing on the minor when the major is screaming at us? Because that's our mental habit. So, cool. So, the bite can restore any relationship, including, think about this, negative feelings you may have for past experiences or failures. See, one of the first things I would do in terms of coaching people in Manatech and doing a program around this would be that we would do bites around our past failures in Manatech. Do a bite around that. Wow, how powerful is that? Talk about changing the mental habit that you have. What caused you to immediately think about all the reasons why you can't be presidential? If I don't solve that problem in your brain, I don't think you're ever going to get to presidential director. And I've looked at a lot of my past programs. People fall in love with all the stuff that I do and the trainings and the teachings and the education and giving you all the tools. Why is it that, you know, 6 months later, there are not 20 of those people that become presidential directors? There might be one or two, not 20, not 50. That's my goal for everybody that goes through one of my programs. So why is it that it's not happening? Well, I think it's because this. I said, this was so eye-opening to me. It was huge. I'm not helping you in the number one way you really need to be helped, which is viewing yourself differently, changing the mental habits that you have that are going to create the greatness, because the how-tos aren't enough. We know that. What was Clemmer's book? If how-tos were enough, we'd all be skinny, rich, and happy. We know they're not enough. So anyway, so the great concept around bites. So the bite idea, and again, it can be used in any aspect of your life. Here's the second simple life balance tool that he gives in the book. He talks about the miracle of feelings journaling. And how critical is that? Well, how true is it that when we walk around Earth today, we see a lot of people who are emotionally just non-connected? I mean, I walk around all of them, especially when I lived in New York City. Oh my gosh, what a disaster that was. I mean, I didn't see one happy person the whole time I lived in New York. I mean, walking on the streets. People look around and they're on autopilot. Why? Because they're so busy. They have to get somewhere. There's meetings they have to get to. There's stress in their lives. They're busy. They're busy. They don't have time to make eye contact. They don't have time to be nice. They don't have time to smile. They don't have time to do all this stuff. We are doing the same thing. We try to be efficient. We live our lives on very low levels of awareness or feelings because we're always about do, do, do. Our numbness is a gigantic roadblock to our success. So how do we switch off of autopilot? Well, he's got a great tool to use. It's called the feelings journaling. Is one of the most powerfully productive and positive processes you can experience. Accessing, expressing it, and writing your deepest feelings. So that's another tool that's awesome. Take the following steps. And this is very hard. Very, very hard. It's very hard. Mostly, who is it harder for, men or women? Men, yeah. And he acknowledges that in his book. Because men tend to be more stoic. They don't have less feelings than women. In fact, I think sometimes they can have more, but they tend to be more stoical about it. They want to hide them because it's more masculine to hide your feelings. Yikes. Thank goodness I'm feminine. I would have a hard time hiding my feelings. As Lydia says, you are all emotion, Mary. I said, no. But I do love to express my feelings. I love to love on people. I love to be there, be out there, live my life to its fullest. But you want to take the following steps in feelings journaling because this is what's going to help unveil for you your why, your motives. You're going to find out so much about you, and you're going to become a whole person again. You're going to be able to overcome some of the stuff that's not allowed you to feel. I mean, how do you build a manatech business if you can't feel? Have I seen some recent presidential, who are stuck in this inability to feel, that are more on autopilot? Yeah. But you know what? Those autopilots are gone today. I mean, long gone. They hit presidential just because they were workaholics, and they built a structure. But manatech is about building relationships. Life is about what? What's the most important thing in life? Relationships. So it's about feeling. It's about emotions. So what you do in your feeling journal is you can be completely open and honest. The following steps is what he outlines in the book. He says, be completely open and honest. It's only for your eyes, so you don't have to worry about what you say because it's not about other people. Most importantly, don't do it in a bound book because you want to do a three-ring binder so you can add pages, subtract pages when you need to. Here's the first subtraction. It says destroy negative entries. It's not about negative. You can write something that you would not want anyone else to read in it, but eventually you're going to delete it, right? So you're going to go back through it and delete things. But it's ideas that we take things out. We want to have it fluid so we can grow with it. Number four, write in the same place in the same time. In other words, the quality of your life today is a direct result of the habits you've formed. So you want to have habits in your life around doing this feelings journal. It's a routine. It's one of the most important habits you can ever acquire. That's his words. Most important habit you can ever acquire is developing a daily feelings journaling. And that means maybe 10 minutes a day you spend that. It's not an hour. You can find 10 minutes. And he sees remarkable results. And develop your skills over time. In other words, when you first start doing it, don't expect to be some kind of genius at this. Don't expect it to flow naturally. Don't expect yourself to be, you know, right on top of all this stuff. And but over time, you're going to be more and more proficient with it. You're going to be more patient. You're going to be able to build up from when you start patient, you're going to be able to build up from there. And you know, as he says, it's going to eventually become one of the most productive and fulfilling daily activities in your life. Wow. How many of you have done feelings journaling before? Here's a master at success, at achieving the greatness in your life. A guy who's 40 years mentoring with Napoleon Hill, and he's telling me that one of the most productive and fulfilling daily activities in my life is going to be something I've never done yet at 57 years old, which is a feelings journal. That's pretty awesome. I look at that and I said, you know, I was so turned on because I was like, wow, I'm going to add more to my life here. by doing this, right? So, and then he gave a checklist. I think I put that as an attachment. And this is just to give you ideas, people. It's not, you know, without getting the book and really studying it and working with it, it's going to be hard to do these things. But it gives you a grasp of what this is about. It's really cool. And then you want to take the Feelings Journal Checklist Challenge. Every day for a week, journal your feelings for at least 10 minutes. All of you can do that in the next 7 days. And I suggest you do it because what I want to do next Monday on the call, before we get started on the next outline, I'm just going to ask people, whoever journaled, did a feelings journal for 7 days, tell me where you are today. What was your response to it? How did it work for you? Okay, so we're going to get feedback from you. So I'm asking all you on this call today to please take the challenge. And let's just do that little piece of it. And it can be applied to any area of your life you want to change. The top 8 benefits and applications he's seen with his clients over the years were, 1, crystallizing thoughts, working through problems, releasing stress. He said it's been the 1 way that people have found their most critical goal for their life is in their feelings journaling. Isn't that cool? Talk about getting focused. 2, purges negative feelings. And he gives 10 steps to negating, getting rid of your negative feelings. 3, prepare to communicate. When you're about to have some presentation or talk to a spouse or have a very important, feelings journaling is just phenomenal to help work that out. 4, improve family relationships. Everybody could use that. Receive inspiration. Man, all of us could use that. Increase creativity. I love that aspect of it. Capture special moments and write your life story. These are the 8 benefits applications he has seen with his clients over the years. Those are the 8 major ones, top 8. So if any of those interest you, this is definitely something, a habit we should develop. The slight edge in your career, and he wrote about that. That's another chapter in the book. Is your life dying from making a living? And this is so true. We've talked about this, and we recognize it. Our society is so very focused on making money, whether to prove our worth or to just get by or beliefs around we're not enough, whatever it is that forces us to get into this money, 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 money. I grew up that way. I grew up in scarcity. In fact, Lydia and I were talking in a Bible study this weekend about some of the bondage that we have that has kept us from living that full life in Christ. And one of the things that Lydia said, Mary Jo, I don't see a lot in you. You just love everybody. And I said, well, I can tell you that because of that, my parents being out of the Depression and that Depression mentality, I remember as a kid seeing a chocolate chip cookie and my mom would take the chocolate chips out, right? She made everything from scratch, but she never put the chocolate chips in the batter. She always just laid it. She made the cookies on the cookie sheet and then she'd take the Nestle morsels out and she'd put like 1 chocolate chip in each cookie because we couldn't afford anything more. And I remembered as a kid going, I will never want for chocolate morsels. I mean, it was just like, and, you know, people ask, what drove you to be what you are, Mary Jo? What drove you to law? And I said, I don't know, but that picture in my brain is as clear as if it happened yesterday. Isn't that amazing? But also in that was the concept that what the negative side of that was that I became this provider. And somehow when you become the provider, you kind of discount God in your life because he is the provider. So I said, if there's some kind of bondage that still exists in my relationship with the Lord, I think that that underlying principle in my life was really, really just really led me for many years. Today, I no longer, because I just pass everything through, but I still have a desire to be the provider, but not a provider for others. No longer provider for me. It's now the provider. It's this ever-essent provider for whatever the Lord lays on my heart. So it's a little different directional, but it was a huge burden. But it's again, we get focused on making money instead of what? The most important thing we have, what's the most important thing in our life is relationships. And we tend to put more value on net worth than relationships. In fact, I wrote in here too about that. He didn't write this down, but I wrote down the fact that money is the 1 cause of divorce. Does that say that relationships are more important than money? No, it says exactly the opposite. The key to financial success is creating an environment in your everyday life that allows you to truly focus your attention. And you can't focus your attention if money is driving it. So remember, the mind can't focus on 2 dissimilar things. So if you're preoccupied with stress and worry, your productivity and ability to succeed will be very limited. One of the exercises he has people do is he puts out both your hands, stretch your hands out, directly out. And now one of your hands is money, your business. 1 is business and 1 is family. Now the exercise is you're going to put 1 hand over the other. So like take your right hand and say, my right hand is business and my left hand is family. So what's going to be the core of your life? Make a fist with the core and then wrap the other one around it. And hopefully what most of you will find yourself doing is making the fist with the family and wrapping the business around it. But the problem in our society today is too many people make the fist as the business and then wrap the family around it. So you're making the family fit around the business. Wow. Priorities screwed up, right? Yeah. So if you truly desire to make more money, reduce stress, increase balance in your life, the grand key is the quality of your relationships. And I put a relationship pyramid that came out of the book as an attachment as well. Next, he talked about slight edge in your personal life. Put the most important person in your life first, and that's you. Now, trust me, people, I'm not telling you not to take the Christian walk, which is about focusing on others, right? And that we dedicate our lives to others, and Christ is number one in our life. So don't read this as a conflict with the Christian walk. Read this as the importance that, you know, love others as you love yourself. I had this discussion with my pastor one time, and he goes, Mary Jo, I never looked at it that way. And I said, well, if God's telling us to love others as you love yourself, he obviously has underlying that, the concept that we love ourselves. You got to start with a love of you. Why do you love yourself? Because you're made in the image of God. If you don't love yourself, you're going to be incapable of loving others. So you got to focus on self. You got to take care of yourself. You can't take it. Remember the old concept? Why do they even eat? It goes so far as even in the airplanes. When they drop the mask, they say, mothers, put the mask on yourself first before you assist your child. Right? The idea is you're going to be worthless to your child if you fight with him to try to get his mask on and you die in the process. Right? So the idea is take care of yourself. Get a specific appointment with yourself every day. Believe that this is the most important appointment of the day, your appointment with you. And during this time, he builds it into being a project. You focus on improving your spiritual walk, which he says at least 15 minutes. These are all minimums. 15 minutes on your spiritual walk, which means time with God or whatever that spiritual walk is for you. Right? Spend time in scripture, spend time with whatever that is for you personally. Emotional, 5 minutes in minimal, writing about in your feelings journal. So I would say 10 to 15 in a feelings journal because that's unbelievably expansive and instructional for you. And what did he tell you? He said it's one of the most productive and fulfilling daily activities in your life. One of the most, it will become one of the most productive, fulfilling daily activities in your life. So I think it deserves more than 5 minutes, but that's what he wrote in the book. So 5 minutes minimal writing in your feelings journal. And then physical health. In other words, you got to spend 20 minutes exercising, strengthening you for the trials of the day. Whoa, I know that's the number one thing people probably leave out. But that's, he says, that's your personal time. Dedicate, that's you. That's for you. It's to support you. And he said also discover and attain your white hot imperative. That's a process in itself. What's a WHI? It's a project that makes us really excited. It's what brings greatest excitement in your life. And what you do is when you pursue the most exciting thing in your life, that will fuel and drive you to achieve everything else you desire and add an incredible amount of joy to your life. Right? And how do you identify what's the most exciting thing in your life? Well, similar to identifying your goals. To identify, if you've won the lottery, so now what? What do you do next? You just won $20 million. What are you going to do next? You're going to die in 1 year, so now what? What are you going to do? You have 12 months to live, so what are you going to do? When you were a kid, what do you always dream of doing? These are kind of questions you'd ask to try to find that WHI, but it takes time to develop it because if you have the wrong WHI, it's kind of like in Manatech when you get people to draft their whys. If you have the wrong why, it'll never work. The way will never present itself. So 6 steps to the plan. In fact, that's one of the things I'm doing right now with some of the people I'm coaching. When they're not making progress, I go, okay, let's go back to the why, because clearly we didn't hit the home run ball. We missed it. Something's missing in the why. But a lot of it's something missing in the belief. It's that what? Habits. The thinking habits that are malfunctioning. 6 steps to the plan. Describe your WHI. Notice how it almost is spelled the same as Y. Your white hot imperative. Clearly and completely, motive. You have to have a powerful one. Remember the girl in the Volkswagen. Identify the obstacles. Weigh price against motive. What and when. Create a bite for your WHI. Create a bite. We know what a bite is now. I trained you already on that one first part of the call. All right, so that's cool, huh? That's a slight edge in your personal life. The slight edge in your family life. He talks about develop a continuing growing love affair with your spouse. If you're married, that's a great thing to do. Give at least 2 warm fuzzies every day. So I copied the warm fuzzies, so now you guys can look at it and make a chart. Make sure 2 warm fuzzies every day. Create a bite around your marriage. Build a 3x5 card around your spouse. How great that spouse is, what that spouse means to you, right? Create a bite around your marriage. Be a friend. Not just a spouse, you want to be part of being a spouse is being a friend. A date night, set date nights, and make a statement of promise. And that's all in the book. I can't get into it all because we only have 5 minutes left. I want to finish the outline. But it's great. It's just a great way to improve that marriage. Because you want your marriage, if your marriage isn't a 10 today, then make it a 10. And these are some great ideas on how to get that 10 back in your marriage. What does a 10 in your marriage do for the rest of your life? Some of you don't have a 10 today. And I don't have a 10. It's amazing as I look at it and say, why don't I have a 10? Because I'm not working on it enough. And I know we love to blame the other person 101 ways and we complain about that. And it's really, you know, in the Bible it says don't speak lowly about your spouse, right? You're never supposed to. So the idea is that you start speaking up. And that's what the bite is all about. It's pouring positives into them. No matter what they are, what they do, speaking positives into them. So that's critical. And then the other thing he talks about is family. It's not just your spouse, but what about your kids? He says, enjoy a close, positive relation with each of your children. Make a daily family connection. How many times do, you know, you go out and work and you don't make a connection with your child on a daily basis? Oh, my gosh. Sometimes we go weeks on end without a connection with our kids. Some of us don't make connection with the kids until something goes wrong. Wow, is that crazy? I mean, we got to start looking at this and saying, what are we doing on a daily basis to make a connection with our kids? That's what's going to bring the strength in the relationship. So when they have an issue or something comes up, they come to you because you know why? You have that daily connection with them. So now it's a little harder. I have 2 kids, my niece and nephew, that are outside of the house, and daily connections just don't happen. But, boy, weekly connections absolutely happen. I don't go a week without talking to them, being with, sending them something cute, dropping something in the mail, emails, texts, whatever. I mean, it's just about connecting, staying in contact. And he talked about the color code, Dr. Hartman's color code. I went and actually took that. You can look it up and take it yourself. But it talks about what you were like as a child. So, wow, does that fun for me. You know, we did the personality quadrants at Manifest with Robert Rome, and that's awesome. And you know me, I'm a great follower of personality quadrants because I think it just absolutely increases your ability to relate to people. And what is Manatech all about? You relating to people. So if you haven't gone through the personality quadrant stuff and you haven't revisited it 5 more times and you haven't become totally proficient with it, I suggest you get back to work because it will make a gigantic difference in how you progress in your Manatech business. But it's about understanding personality quadrants and how to relate to them, how to step into somebody else's quadrant so you can make them as comfortable as possible. I mean, there's a reason why when I do 3-way calls and I meet people and they go, man, Mary Jo, when I met you the other day, I felt like you and I had known each other for 30 years. Why does that happen? It happens because I really get personality quadrants. And I'm not always proficient at it, but I work on it. And it's something I need to work on and pay attention to a lot because it doesn't just come natural to us. We have a tendency to be who we are, what our quadrant is, and that's where we come from. But when we're out there doing Manatech, we've got to shift into other people's quadrants because that's what's going to help move them forward. Okay? So he says, same thing with kids. So you can take that if you want to, but he says that's going to help your relationship with your children. Number 8, the next chapter was about ultimate life balance tool, your life creed, and this was really powerful. The ultimate tool was the life creed. Guarantee yourself a lifetime of success, and I wanted that just talk to you a little bit about something that he wrote in the book because it was really powerful for me. He said the first paragraph in this chapter was, have you ever marveled at how time seems to fly by? We all have, hang on a second, we got phones ringing in the background, sorry. Can't focus when, we got so much other action going on. Lydia left the room and left her cell phone, so moving it out. Okay, so here is what he wrote in the book. Guarantee yourself a lifetime of success through the ultimate life balance tool, your life creed. The first paragraph goes like this. Have you ever marveled at how time seems to fly by? We all have good intentions, goals we want to achieve, habits we wish to change, and relationships we hope to improve. But before we know it, another month, year, or decade has raced by, and we're still stuck in our old ways. How many of you on this call totally relate to that paragraph? And it's intriguing. He says, in this book, you have learned about simple but powerful tools that, when consistently implemented, are guaranteed to produce remarkable results in every aspect of your life. But how do you keep from simply putting it down on a shelf and falling right back into your old habits? And he said, the simplest, easiest, most effective tool I know of is called the Life Creed. And he talks about how to build it. He says, guarantee yourself a lifetime of success. Purpose of a life creed is to act as a catalyst and a source of inspiration. Napoleon Hill's successful people all had a definite major purpose. They called it DMP. You want to turn your goals and ideals into a life creed statements, and it's the first step in turning the picture of who you want to become into the reality of who you are. Awesome. So what I've done is I've attached some of the Life Creed questions on the back as an attachment to this outline. And really, you can't, it's not going to be, I mean, you can take some of this information, but without training and teaching and doing this over a period of time, I think it's going to be very hard to go through this. You can do it on a superficial level with what I've given you today, but they're so incredibly important, I don't want people to be superficial about it. I want you to really get the idea of how critical this is. He has you not only write down your life creed on the six most important areas of your life, but he also wants you to tape it. And when you record it, he also wants you to use specific music that you choose behind it called accelerated learning music. So every time you listen to it, you have this music background to it. It's a pretty awesome process to go through, and I love it because what you're doing is you're doing what? What are you doing through this process? Let's go back to the first chapter in the book about the Bunker Bean effect. You get it? You're reprogramming your brain because your brain doesn't know how to distinguish reality from what it's being taught, right? It doesn't distinguish it. So if you feed your brain certain things, it's going to say, okay, that's reality. And then you start living that reality. So that's what you're doing through this Life Creed statement. You're building your life. You're building, what do you want to be? What do you want the ideal life in those six relationships? And that's going to become your Life Creed. And then it says, why does it work? Because he gives you six practical reasons why it works. It stops your self-talk. A lot of us have self-talk. And number two, expectation. It's in your own words. Your brain cannot distinguish what is real and what is hoped for. So you start dealing with law of attraction. You get what you expect. As a man thinketh, so is he. All of these absolutely well-known principles apply. And then the music behind it helps you with your life creed to take it in. Visualization, it gives you visualization. It helps you replace old mental models with new mental models. Get rid of the mental habits that you've been establishing in your life that have gotten to you where you are today but haven't gotten to you where you want to be in life. And daily practice and repetition are so critical. And then he actually publishes in his book Progress, a Scoreboard for Life, and that you can watch it. And he finally says at the end, he says, mentoring is achieving the highest level of slight edge. Help others gain their slight edge. And when I got to that part of the book and I started reading that part of the book, I started thinking to myself, I said, you know what? This is some of the best material I've read in a long time. I mean, I love Tony Jerry's how-tos and all that kind of stuff, but why is it that you guys aren't doing Tony Jerry today? What happened? He was so hot and so popular, and everybody loved him, and we got his strategic acceleration book, and da-da-da-da-da, and then here we are today, 9 months later, and no one's doing it, or 8 months later, or 6 months later, or very few are following it. Why is it? Because we've fallen back into our mental habits. So how-tos are out there, but you know what the problem is? If we don't get our mental thought process in place, if we don't restructure our mental habits, we're going to fall back exactly where we were. And so as I was reading about mentoring is achieving the highest level of slight edge, I made the commitment myself. I talked to Lydia about it this morning and last night, and I said, you know what? I really want to take this book and I want to teach it. I want to grow in it. I want to live it. I want to teach it. I want to make it part of people's lives. I believe it's going to have more impact than anything else I could teach in the next 4 months. So I talked to her about building a program around, a full-fledged program around Manatech and the Slight Edge starting September 10th. So that we go through every single one of these exercises, we talk, we coach on it, we isolate what it means for Manatech, what it means for you, what you're going to create, and not just Manatech, but personal life, other areas of your life that you want to tackle. I think it's time. It's time to put an end to the, you know, these mental games that we play and just say, we really are going to take on a new life. We're really going to be the greatness that we know we can be. And I'll probably in the trainings and teachings add a lot of spiritual stuff behind it because that's my walk. So it's hard for me to teach and train without bringing in scripture. But the idea is that you don't have to be a Christian to take this class. You're just going to get some other insights in what the good book says about all this as well. But the neat thing is it's really about establishing better mental habits that'll totally change your life and lead you in a direction to create what you choose to create, and no longer being a meandering generality, but being a meaningful specific, and, you know, again, making those dreams our realities. No more wishes, wants, and all that stuff, people. We're going to get in the creator mode. So that's what we're going to be doing. But anyway, great, great, great book. And by the way, for those of you who want to take that program, we're going to start outlining it, getting it out in the next week because I want people to think about it. The other thing is if you sign up for the program, I'm going to buy the books. So if you sign up, a lot of you might have enjoyed this and you go on the internet and want to buy the book, you can do it. But, you know, there's no requirement that you join Mary Jo in her process over the next, September, October, November. It probably is going to take us 12 weeks minimal. I haven't outlined every, sex session yet, but as soon as I get that done, I'll put it in a format, which will be over the next week. We'll finalize that. But the idea is that if you join my program with me, and I don't know what price there's going to be on it, but I will supply everybody one of these books that joins the program. So I'm going to have registration probably close after ManaQuest because I want to ship all the books out, and I want everybody to have the book by September 10th, which is our kickoff date for that program. So anyway, awesome book. Love it. I think it really gives us the tools that we need to really get unstuck in a new way of looking at it. And some of us have done some of this before, but I just felt this really had a major, major impact on me in reading it. And when I have that sense, and it was really intriguing. Let me just tell you one other thing before we go today, that when we were thinking last week about what to do on the Monday call, Lydia was coming up with some ideas and different things, and I said, you know what, Lydia, I just feel like something in my heart is telling me I need to teach on the slight edge. And I said, remember that book by Jeff Olson, da, 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 and we started talking about that. So Lydia brought up that she thought that the book had been amended or changed or there was a new, a new edition out. And when we started researching, now, isn't this amazing? Who put that thought in my head about teaching on the slight edge? And then it wasn't what I had thought. It was this book. And I was just so marveled by what this turned out to be. I mean, I had never heard of Leo Weidner before. I mean, some of you may have, but I hadn't. And all of that, and it was just, I allowed my intuition to lead me, and this is where it took me. So I'm ecstatic. I loved it. I hope you guys did. Any feedback on the call? I know I went over a little bit. Anybody enjoy the call? Does this make sense to you in terms of moving forward in Manatech or other areas of your life?
This makes total sense.
Yeah, good, Ann. You liked it then. Isn't it
Rachel?
Oh, I've been thinking this line anyway. I've been getting, it's been getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet somebody else is there too. I bet, mm-hmm. It's a path.
Yep.
Mary Jo?
Uh-huh.
This is Rebecca. I am so totally in agreement with you.
Yeah, then, girl, huh? Great.
Because I've been thinking of those same things. It's got to be mindset, and I've had to do something else to shift because I knew that I wasn't, and I've been talking to my upline presidential, and I'm making a shift in one area, but this is so true because I've got all the Tony Jury things, and I can't go forward. And then you said exactly what I was thinking. We've
right.
got to do those mindset things. We're going to shift back to our old crap.
I know. Because it's like, oh, my gosh, this old crap is still there. I thought it was gone. Where's my chisel and my hammer? I want to get rid of it. Great.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yep, sign me up.
Great.
Yep. We're all in.
All in. Right. Oh, somebody, Lydia's got an email saying I needed to re-describe the program. Well, the program, as I view it, it's going to kick off on September 10th. Because that's the first date I got available to kick it off, and even though I'm going to California for a wedding, a huge wedding that week and 5 days out there, I still want to start. So we're going to start on September 10th, and the program will probably last, my suspicion will be about 12 weeks, and it'll probably be Monday calls, and then a lot of work to be done. I mean, you're going to be doing all these exercises, and you're going to be feeding them back, and I'm going to review them and send them back, and we're going to work on them, and we're going to chisel them and grind them until they're just where they need to be. So we're going to really put a ton of energy and effort into it. You're all going to get a book, so I'm going to buy the Slight Edge books, and I'll ship it out as soon as you sign up for the program. We will be shipping out these books to people because that's what we're going to use kind of as our direction. Everybody's going to read through that book, and probably you're going to use a highlighter and mark that thing up to you know what, and we're going to redo the brain, the mental. We're going to change so that we're now going to live our dreams instead of, you know, settling. That's the whole thing. And I haven't come up with the name of the program because it just became, you know, after preparing for this and reading the book and doing what I did for today, it just was so clear to me this is the direction so many of us need to go because we're stuck. And, you know, Extreme Food Makeover is not going to get us unstuck. Those are all these things that are given to us are all the how-tos, but that's not what's holding us back. We're done with how-tos. We're on to I need to be fixed. And I need, you know, I'm sitting here with you today as presidential, whose business has been growing for 9 straight business periods. And you know what? I am so far from achieving what I dream of doing. I'm not even close. And so my dedication is I'm all in. And I believe that I'm stuck in a lot of these things, but they all are home run balls. So that's kind of the program. And I'll wrap it up in a one-page thing by next Monday. You guys will all have it, and you can choose in or not. You could, there's, you know, no reason why you can't buy the book yourself. If you want to go and try to tackle it on your own, that's fine. I just suggest that don't tackle it on your own. Even if you don't want to be part of my program, find some mentors, because that's the beauty of the book, is mentoring. Because I want everybody who goes through my program to feel like they got 1,000% out of the book. That nothing, there wasn't something, because, you know what, here, let me explain to you this. We read a book with the same exact mindset that has been holding us back. So are you getting this? You guys can read this book and get nothing out of it because it's still the same old mindset. So it's kind of we're in a trap, aren't we? But if we read it with a group of people and we get training around it and we all get input and then we get to get feedback on doing our little exercises, now we're no longer stuck in our mindset. We get to tap into other people. And that's the importance. So I suggest this is a book you ought not do by yourself ever. So if you choose not to be part of the program, get a group of 5 people and maybe try to conquer it that way, whatever way you want. But know that I'm making it open and wide open for anyone who wants to join in. We are going to have fun with it, and we are going to create greatness. Amen. Okay? All right. That's it. Anyone else have any comments or anything they want to add? I love you guys. Keep doing all the great work that you are doing, knowing that the future is going to unfold like never before for you. So that's my kind of my new mantra out there is like we're in this creation stage of let's create better mental habits that will truly produce greater results in our lives. Okay? All right, everybody. Love you all. Talk to you next Monday.